Hello, everybody. Dr. Lonnie Stewart here from the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. Are you a physical therapy student about to start studying for the National Physical Therapy Examination? Or maybe you're a professor, a program director, or a clinical instructor who teaches DPT students preparing for the NPTE? Either way, we would recommend checking out our sponsor, NPTE Final Frontier, and the community they've built around preparing for and succeeding on the NPTE. That exam and the preparation that goes along with it can be long, tedious, difficult, and stress-inducing, but it doesn't have to be. NPTE Final Frontier has the tactics and resources to help address all of the usual barriers. They even have scholarships to help with NPTE study courses, FSBPT registration fees, and even research opportunities. And if that's not enough, they're even donating to the very first annual HET Podcast Scholarship to be awarded at the end of every year. Go to npteff.com for all of the details and use code HET for 10% off all purchases. Links to both the NPTE Final Frontier and their scholarship options are available in the show notes. And now, let's get ready to learn.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I am Dr. Megan Teets here with you today, and I am very excited to be joined with Dr. Tyler Tarver from Tarver Academy, who is going to be talking to us about some fun stuff today. How are you doing today, Tyler?
Oh, so great. So happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Cool. Well, I had the pleasure of having Tyler come to my school and do some professional development 2 years in a row, actually. And I fell in love with a lot of that you had to say about student engagement and just your utilization of technology and your energy, I think, perspective also from the classroom side and the administration side. I think you've got a lot of great things to say. I've become a follower of you on through Tarver Academy. I've checked out a bunch of your different training things. And so I definitely nerd out here a little bit. I was excited to be able to get this going today.
Well, the feeling's mutual. I'm rubber, you're glue. I feel the same way.
Very cool, Tyler. Well, thank you very much for being here. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background? What's your passion?
Yeah, I just love helping people. That's my thing. I love helping people. I ended up being a teacher, taught math. Then I was a principal. And then I was a central office. And then I was a dean of college. And so I just love getting, whether it's students, you know, K through 12, college, helping teachers. I just love helping people exceed their own expectations. Like if it's Harry Potter, we're taking the OWLs. I want everybody to exceed expectations. That's what I want. I don't know, anything I can do to help that. And, you know, one of the big, you know, mediums I've had over the past couple of years to do that is through online stuff. So like social media, you know, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, I'm able to put out short little clips to add somebody value in like a minute. And then I always like try to link to more value that they can have. And so that's kind of been my shtick for a while, if you will, but it's fun. I like creating things and helping people save time. I'm a big fan of saving time. It's one of the most undervalued resources we have as humans. And so I'm like, if I can chip away at stuff that's nagging at your time, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, we all have so little time, and being able to get as much back as we can is what we really all need. So given your breadth of experience and all of those age ranges, student engagement, I think it's a big issue that we're all trying to get. We've got the social media generation. And so all the online stuff, I think, is a great way to try to approach students and get them a little bit more engaged in class. But how would you define student engagement? And what do you see as the teacher's role in promoting that in the classroom?
I mean, teacher's role in that is, I mean, they're in charge of it. Like you're curating it. And so here's the thing that I kind of like push back against when people are like, oh, these kids today, they don't want to pay attention to nothing. I was like, yes, they do. They're paying attention to something. And the problem is, it's not that kids have gotten like worse or this or that. It's that they have more options. Okay. Right. They got like when we were kids, it was like, oh, cool. There's like 8 TV channels. I hope Cartoon Network isn't playing a Braves game so I can watch cartoons. Like you have no options to choose other things. Now they have literal unlimited options on what consumes their attention. Now, our role as educators is, okay, I understand that I might not be, it's like teaching quadratic formula might not be as fun as watching people ramp tractors on the farm, you know, whatever it is they're watching. However, if I can relate to it, we watch the video and then we look at where they started, where they ended. We talk about, you know, like trajectory, you know, inertia. We can, you know, introduce parabolas. If you throw something across a field, like you can figure out ways to make stuff feel relevant to students. And yes, there are always, there's one kid that gets on a Snapchat. Yeah, nobody's going to fail. Okay. But there's a lot of kids that they are craving the opportunity to be excited about what they're learning because they have to learn it either way. Why not as a teacher try to learn to adapt these new ways to engage them? And honestly, I thought, because that seems like real abstract, like, okay, well, what is Tyler? Give me the nuts and bolts of it. The nuts and bolts is if you don't know what engages them, have them help come up with the lesson that would engage them. Hey guys, this is what we got to learn about. How can we use stuff you like or stuff you're watching or you're into and relate it to this stuff? You know, use ChatGPT to help relink that stuff, but also get the student's opinion. They're going to be more empowered and they're going to feel like more like our class and not just your class, the teacher.
No, 100%. I think that getting that student feedback has been one of the biggest ways I've been able to grow in the classroom. Talking about options, you know, I think option overload is one of the things that we deal with now. I guess you're right. Back growing up, there was very limited options on TV. And now I have a hard time deciding what I want to watch because there are too many options. And so applying that same thought process to the classroom, how do you decide about giving students enough option to find what fits their learning style and what's going to meet their attention versus too much option overload and they just shut down?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you nailed it. It's like if we can tailor stuff around what either engages them or fits their learning style and then come up with 3 to 5, here's the thing. You're going to know after 2 or 3 times where you give them options what most people pick and you just trim it out. It's like you have 10 options of what to offer in the cafeteria, but everybody only buys 3 things. Just make the 3 things. You know what I mean? And so it's like you offer a bunch and then you trim it down. Honestly, that's one of my issues, like creating resources and making, you know, social media posts. Like I have so many websites on that I've created that I thought would be great. Like, this is awesome. And I think it was fun or entertaining or, in, you know, engaging or educational for people or helpful, but it's a graveyard now because it was too much. And that's when I started narrowing into Tarver Academy and offering, like, you know, the membership where you can do online PD and I can go speak at your school. Like, I figured out that's my greatest ROI as opposed to like spending, you know, 10 hours working on this, you know, whatever Google Doc, and then nobody cares. Like, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, the thing that I made that teachers really hate is like evaluations where students evaluate them. I'm like, this could be helpful. Teachers are like, no, we're good. I don't need them kids' opinions. But that's like you figure out what actually makes the biggest impact. Because honestly, you know, 80-90% of the movement happens from a couple things. And you got to figure out how to cut off the 1 or 2 that are only the 10%, you know, and trim that out and keep leaning into what's working.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm throwing everything at the wall just to see what sticks. And then the things that stick, I just keep trying to come back at. But then I don't want to get stuck in a rut because every year is a new group of students. And so it's an ever-evolving game. And I think that's one of the things that I thought clinic was going to be something where I would always have a new challenge as a physical therapist. And coming into the classroom, I worried about getting bored because I'm teaching the same things year after year. But the student diversity has definitely shown me that it's never going to be the same year to year.
No, after a couple years, when you know your curriculum, you're not learning the curriculum, you're learning your students. And that's what you're doing. That's what your prep is. That's you're differentiating, you're learning the students, you're learning how to engage them. That's the challenge. That's the fun part, the people part of any job. The fun part and the challenging part is the people part. You know what I mean? Right. Like, oh, I got to learn the menu so I can be a waiter at this fancy restaurant. Cool. After you memorize it, now you're learning how to work with people, which is the most important part of it. So same thing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think that one of the issues that we get to with having more of this transition to online virtual learning and some of the things that I see students coming in who did some of their prerequisites as all online classes is they're missing the soft skills of people things. And they haven't had the engagement with their peers the same way they would in those face-to-face classes. So on that note, what recommendations would you make for helping to get students more interactive in some of those online settings?
So honestly, put them in the situations they're going to be in. You know, if I was just like, hey, you need to learn this. And the kids are like, oh, cool. Why? Like how? Like they don't, you know what I mean? Like unless you've got like the rapport and the trust with them, it's really hard, especially when you start, you know. But I think the biggest thing is find something that's relevant to them. You know, whatever age, 16, 15, 16 and above, guess what? They're applying for jobs. They want to make money. Cool. You know what's relevant to them? Learning how to get a job, you know? And it's like, you could do like mock interviews, and you can teach them like, hey, this is how you do a handshake. You match the person's grip. Like, you don't put two hands on, like, you learn all the little traits that lead them to the best shot possible, and then hope that their personality aligns with what that person's looking for. But you're trying to teach them the things that actually apply to what they're, you know, what they're learning or what they're going to be using.
Right. Just finding that interest factor for them. I think I would agree with that. And one of the coolest things that I learned from when you came to my campus to talk was going into ChatGPT and taking a specific topic that you're teaching in class and connecting it to whatever that student's interested in, and try to generate some study tools that way. And I've used it for my daughter. I've used it for my students. I've got one student who last year, really big fan of cows, and she's like, okay, well, we're going to talk about COPD as it relates to cows, and just gave ChatGPT that prompt. It came back with this whole thing about the alveoli being the fences and the cows needing the airways. And like, it was,
how did it go over?
It made perfect sense to her. And she was like, oh, okay, I get this. And it was a topic that she'd struggled with so much. And it was like this instant, oh, okay, I understand what this means. And like, I love it. So any other cool AI type tips, tricks you could use to help kind of gear personalization for students in trying to reach them as an educator?
I mean, that's one of my favorites is you take what you're trying to teach them, and then you just like shroud it in something they already know about, whether it's, you know, Algebra 1 and then relating it to geometry, or it's, you know, WWE and relating it to the American Revolution. Like, I think it is so cool that you can now do that differentiate thing that we never had time to do. Like, you can now do that because you have programs that can literally take what I know and then adapt what I don't. You could actually have kids write their first paper of what they know. I was like, hey, here's assignment. Write for 5 minutes everything you know about the American Revolution. And they write it. And they write everything they already know. And then you can have them like, okay, stop, everybody stop. You've written everything you know, all the facts about everybody. I want you to copy that, go to ChatGPT or Gemini if you're using Google, and say, I'm trying to learn about the American Revolution to the level of a, you know, 10th grade student. This is everything that I know, period. Please fill in the gaps and link together things that are all relevant that I should know, colon. Have them paste each and every individual thing, and then see what they, like, it's going to take what they already know, and then it's going to expound. You're not bringing it out from left field or right field. It's just, it's growing from what they've already, it's like a snowball from what they've already started rolling down the hill. You're not just throwing it in the air and hoping it sticks. So I like that one. I think that one's fun. There's a ton of others. I like to have it pose as different notable figures and give their perspective on something. So like, you have the content and you're wanting them to learn, I don't know, you're wanting them to learn, what, give me an example. They're trying to learn about photosynthesis, okay? Hey, everybody, here's what I want you to learn about photosynthesis, but I want you to type it and learn it from somebody that you care about, notable figures, past, present, future. You can have people like George Washington explain photosynthesis, Aristotle, you could have Snooki from Jersey Shore explain it. You have options where anybody who has enough online presence that ChatGPT or Gemini can pull from, and then they can do it from that perspective. You could have them go in and say, hey, I'm trying to learn about photosynthesis. Write a song about it to the tune of Drake's, you know, God's Plan. And then they can sing the tune in their head and it'll straight write it in a second. Like, I was doing a training for a car dealership this morning on helping them get better at social media. And I literally, you know, showed them how the social media apps and how to do it. And then I showed them how to get ideas and stuff from ChatGPT. And I had one dude was like, what about song? Like, what if I made up a song about certain things, try to catch people's attention? I was like, yeah, as long as, you know, you can do cringy, which also gets views, but you could, you know, come up with it. And I go, hey, here's an idea. That ChatGPT thing I showed you for ideas. You can ask it, say, hey, sing a song about the, you know, 2012 Dodge Charger, but do it to the tune of, you know, I don't know, Hush Little Baby, Don't Say a Word, Mama's Gonna Buy You a Mockingbird. You know what I mean? Like, you have options
stuff
in seconds. And then you go edit it. You don't just read it and that's it. You adapt it. It's an assistant, not a replacement, but it's like the best and smartest assistant in the history of mankind.
Oh, absolutely. I did that for a student, rule of nines for burns, for, you know, determining what percentage of a body was burned, and had it come up with a song over the rule of nines for students when they were learning that. And I thought it was awesome. And I think there's so many great resources that you can use the AI for that. Yes, it needs to be an assistant and not a replacement, But what do you say to the people who are too scared to start implementing it with students because they're worried about it becoming the replacement instead of the assistant?
I mean, that's the thing. It's just clear communication. If you just avoid it thinking that kids won't, they're just going to do it thinking that it's allowed because you never said you couldn't do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, Mom, you never said I couldn't shank brother with a sharpened toothbrush in the knee. Like, well, no, it was understood. You know what I mean? Like, we assume too much as educators. And so what I recommend is be clear in the communication. Show them why it's important that they don't just copy paste the question to get the answer. If a teacher isn't comfortable with it, my number one recommendation is start using it. Start using it. And not that like I feel like that's like a gateway drug for you letting your students use it, but start using it. One, it's going to save you a ton of time. You can write emails, reply to emails. You can build curriculum. You can adapt curriculum. You can get critiques from professionals on what you've already created. It can like make your life so much better and easier. But the thing that's also valuable is one, you can see how it can help students. Like, ooh, this would be helpful for students to, you know, if they could maybe list what they know, it would bullet point and give them an idea of how to do it. And then they can go in and write the paper. You can see how it can help them. But even if you hate it, you're like, I never want my students to use this ever again. You know, I don't know why that, like, I don't know what's going on.
Well, so, you know, whenever little you go, age to that
you can
voice.
Have them go in and you go, do what?
There's a little age to that voice, a little technology.
Yeah, I felt like I was like a sage.
And now for a quick shout out to our newest sponsor, Varela Financial. If you're a physical therapist and you have student loan debt, you got to talk to these guys. What makes them unique is that they view financial planning like running hurdles on a track. And for PTs, the first hurdle many of us run into is student loan debt. Varela Financial will help you get over that hurdle. They not only take the time to explain to you which plans you individually qualify for and how those plans work, but they also take the time to show you what your individual case looks like mapped out within each option. So if you're looking for help on your student loan debt or any area of personal finances, we recommend working with them. I use Varela Financial personally, and they were able to help me lower my student loan repayment from about $1,800 a month down to about $135 per month simply by finding the right repayment plan that best fit me, my family, and our life goals. You can check them out at VarelaFinancial.com. Link is in the show notes if you need it for reference, and tell them the HET podcast crew sent you. And now back to the show.
Mentor. I was like the janitor from Rudy. And so whenever you're guiding, you like realize that you don't want your students ever using that, what you can do is it helps you recognize when they use it. Like, I know when people use ChatGPT in an email to me. Like, I got an email from a lady who is runs the master's program at a college, you know, and she emailed me and she was like, hello, Dr. Tarver. I'd like for you to help present on ChatGPT or AI for our cheers, blah, blah, blah. And we're trying to build something for a course. And I just replied, I was like, okay. And I was trying to think, like, are they about to like record me and then monetize it and sell it for the next 20 years? Or do they want me to just come in and do like a 1 hour session? And so I just replied, I was like, hey, what do you mean by course? Like, what are you looking at? And they go, thank you for your question. Here are some potential options for what the course could look like. And it gave me like three or four different, I was like, and I asked her, we finally talked via Zoom, and I go, hey, by the way, did you copy paste my reply to ChatGPT to get the answer? He goes, yes, I did. I go, I know you did. Okay, you sound like a robot. But it's because I use it. Like, yeah. I saw a post that somebody did, I collect sports cards, shout out sports cards. And there's a guy that I really like, and he makes sports cards. He has collabs with athletes. And he reposted a post that someone made about him. And it was just like talking about him and the intricacies of what he does. And it was just a super complimentary post. And he reposted it. That dude wrote that comment with ChatGPT. I bet my life on it.
Yeah.
Because I know how to read ChatGPT because I've been using it for over a year now. And so even if you don't want the students to use it, you need to use it so you can learn when they use it. So that's my tip.
No, and I can 1,000% attest to that because honestly, before you come to our campus, I really hadn't messed with ChatGPT. I was one of those like, AI, I'm just kind of averse. I don't want to put too much of my own thought into it and have it be something detrimental. And so I kind of needed the exposure to feel safe with it, right? And since using it in the last 6-8 months, whatever it's been, I will get an email and I'm like, you didn't write this. This is garbage.
Yep. You took the course. And that's what I was talking to the car people today, and the GM was in there and we were talking about ChatGPT, and he was like, man, I use it for emails and it's really good for this. And he talked about what he used it for. And then he talked about, and I get see when people like use it when they apply for jobs. Like they'll put it on, they'll use it to write their resume. And I'm like, okay. And he said, the way his tone sounded, I was like, do you like that or dislike that? He goes, nah, man, I toss them in the trash. I'm like, you just said that you use it to write marketing emails, but you're trashing resumes that are using. I'm like, okay, but I get it. Like I felt a certain way when I read that email from that lady, you know, I was like, that feels a little weird. But then again, I'll use ChatGPT to do the first draft of my emails, you know, and then I just go and change it and put way too many exclamation points, you know,
yeah,
it's whatever. So it's fun.
Quite a role, you know. Yeah, formatting is one of my favorites, but you know, with all of the options for AI, what do you see happening to the evolution of education in the next 5 to 10 years?
I mean, it's going to play into it because I mean, it's just like YouTube, you know, how often, you know, 10 years ago, teachers didn't, they were calling it the YouTube, you know, not just YouTube. They didn't know how it was or how to use it. And now like research studies, when I was doing my dissertation, I looked at a bunch of research studies, like 90%+ of students are using YouTube, whether a teacher talks about it or not. So it's a part of education, whether the teacher wants to admit it or not. So where AI is going to play in is it's going to be attached to literally everything that we use. It's it's already built into Google Docs. It's built into Gmail. It's built into Canva. It's built into Turnitin. It's built into Grammarly. It's going to be laced across not just every education program, but everything you, it's going to be in your, the keyboard of your phone. It's going to automatically reply to texts for you without you even looking at them. Like it's going to learn us as individuals and then be an extension of us. We are like, we are cyborgs now. We already are cyborgs because of the phone, but it'll be like, literally I'm going to go in. This is Tyler's prediction. I think within the next, you know, probably 5 to 10 years, there's going to be a button I can click in Gmail that says, would you like us to learn you and start using, you know, replying to your emails for you, which is my dream, by the way. and it's going to go back and read 15 years worth of my emails, my replies, my preferences, my style, my stories. And it's going to just have conversations with other people's AIs for me. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be AI talking to AI. And then it's just going to send me a daily recap at the end of the day.
I see it coming as well. And I think that it's one of those things that if we don't learn how to integrate ourselves with it, then it's going to get away from us, and then we'll be the people in 20 years not knowing how to do anything because nothing operates without it.
Correct.
And so I think YouTube's a great example of that, because there's nothing that my students learn that they don't say, oh, I'm just going to look that up on YouTube, because they'll find something that connects with them and it helps meet all of those different learning styles, and something that they didn't get one way presented by somebody else in a different way perfectly lights it up.
Yep.
Actually, this is a little bit random because it was just about an article that I was reading earlier today, but it was on a flipped classroom presentation in education, and where instead of doing lecture in class and then sending students home with homework, you give them a lecture video like on YouTube to watch before class, and then when they're in class, they have activity time where you can do more hands-on things.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting concept that I hadn't really heard of or thought about, and just kind of curious on your thoughts.
Yeah. So I did that with my college flip classroom. You know, I did that with my college kids. I would literally say like something we hadn't addressed yet. I'm like, hey, watch this 25-minute video, take notes on it. And then we'll come to class and we'll discuss it. And so it's like, you're allowing them to get like the first meat of it, their first bites. And then they come into class and now they have me to, hey, they said this, what do you think about this? Or how would this apply here? Like, that's the advantage of me. Like, me just telling them what I know, I could record that once and put it on a podcast and they could listen to it. You know what I mean? And there's people way smarter and better than me at literally anything I can choose that they could listen to. And so what I started doing, this is my favorite way to do it. Okay. So it's kind of like what you were saying, but I kind of put a little spin on it. And it was college kids. I get it. So I don't know what grades you could do this, but I think it can go a lot younger than people think. I would have it to where their assignment, I would go into Google Classroom. I would give them the, 18-minute video that they're supposed to learn from, something we haven't addressed yet. And it was a marketing for entrepreneurs class. And I said, go in and watch this video for homework. Next time we have class, your assignment is I'll put a blank Google slide in here that you all have access to edit. Okay. Pick a topic from the video, and then you're going to build it 1 to 2 slides explaining that, teaching it back to everybody else. And I said, first person to put it in a slide, you can't put it if somebody else already does it. So first come, first serve. You know, it's an incentive to be the first one to watch the video, because then you get to pick. And so we'd come into class and I'd go, okay, guys, before we start, does anybody have any questions? They would talk. I would bounce it back and forth. And then, and we were at Zoom at the time because it was during COVID, and I, or the pandemic, sorry. And so I would share it. And then literally my students would be the ones teaching the class back what someone else had taught through, it was my video or someone else's video, and they're teaching it to the rest of the class. Now, a lot of people are like, well, I'm more of an expert than they are. What if they miss something? Well, the fun thing is I'm still there. Like, yeah. I'm watching this. So each time a student got done presenting, I would ask them follow-up questions, whether one, I think they said a good point and I want them to elaborate. Two, there's something they skipped related to their topic that I want them to address. If they don't know it, I ask the class. If they don't know it, I tell them. It's like, as a teacher, you move from the head of the snake to the tail, and yeah. But you're still guiding it. You know, you're guiding the progression of the class. You're guiding that social process of learning. And so, I don't know, it was one of my favorite ways to teach, and I really enjoyed those classes because it wasn't my class. It was our class, and they were right. The ones doing the meat of the work, and then I was just going up there putting the finishing touches on everything.
No, absolutely. I love those concepts because, like, I truly feel that you understand something better if you can teach it to somebody else. And so if they're coming prepared to be able to do that, then they've had to understand it on a deeper level than if I stood in front of them and talked about it. Yes. And so, you know, especially from a healthcare standpoint, I want them to have that deeper learning so that when they have any diagnosis in the field, they can think through it and understand it. And so it's definitely an approach that I try. I don't always get the best student receptiveness, but
hey, once they get the hang of it, they start leaning in and they start figuring out, and then they see your expectations. And I think it just takes consistency and then clear expectations, you know? And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people are like, well, but then I don't feel like I'm doing the work. Like, what's the goal? You just said it. The goal of your class is for them to learn a deep level of understanding on this. Is it to show how smart you are and how much you know because you can say it all in front of the stage? Like, no. The goal is for them to learn.
Yeah.
And that means they got to do the work. Whoever's doing the work is doing the learning. And that's what I try to push on them.
I will say the only challenge the problem that I've run into with this is that sometimes they'll get competitive over how many slides they have on their topic. Because I'll send out Google Slides with each one of them labeled for their things. And I don't necessarily usually let them pick it because that becomes mayhem with my group. But I typically, okay, you're going to cover this, you're going to cover this. But then it's a competition of, well, how many slides did I have? And did I have enough information? Got to scale it back. Okay, guys, we only have so much class time to talk about this. So while I'm excited that you're so excited to talk about these things, let's reel it back and highlight the most important. And I think that because of the specificity of answers that students can get, being able to reel it back to the most important is an area that they sometimes struggle with. Anything you recommend for helping students hone those skills as far as identifying, okay, take this, leave the rest, because it's not important right now?
I mean, honestly, one is put a timer on them. It's a lot scarier when you're speaking and you see a timer counting you down. You know what I mean? But that's also a mark of understanding, is that you can be concise in your explanation and your recap. Like, that means you're not rambling your way through it. And so I say, start with a timer and say, look, you got 4 minutes. After that, we're done. So that makes them, like, one, hopefully they rehearse it so they know how much time they have with what they want to say. But then two, like, they have to pick out the good stuff, you know? And then honestly, I would use ChatGPT to help me. I would say, hey, here are my notes on what I want to talk about. Or you could record yourself speaking, do your whole talk, okay, for 10 minutes. 10 minutes of talk, and I record it on my, you know, whatever. I do Google Voice, not Google Voice. I'll use Siri or whatever. Siri within ChatGPT here. Okay, sorry. I'm processing this as I do it. Okay, go to ChatGPT on my phone. I say, I'm trying to give a 4-minute talk on blank. Here is what I have so far. Hit the colon, you know, so that you can put the information in. Mm. And then I just do my presentation, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you get done. You talk for 8 or 10 minutes, but you need to cut it down to 4 minutes, period. Then I go back into ChatGPT. It's got all transcribed my entire thing I said. I go, please condense this to the most important parts and make it around 3 minutes total, 3 to 4 minutes total. Boom. It's going to cut out the fluff. You have an assistant to help you cut. I still processed and got all that information. ChatGPT is now just telling me, yo, bro, this is the most important. So
yeah, that's what I think that's awesome, and that just gave me a great idea for an assignment for patient education and how to whittle that down to what patients need to know. And so you've got my wheels turning. I'm excited for when we get off of this here. So I can't let you go without asking my hot button question, because this is such a hot topic right now. What are your thoughts on diversity in education?
Oh, yes, we need more diversity in education. Absolutely. It's windows and mirrors. And like a lot of schools, I think, you know, a lot of schools, depending on where you live, you know, I live in Arkansas. So like you get certain schools that like you look up and it's, you know, just a bunch of white kids, or, you know, you got the schools that are predominantly minority. Like you get schools that are all like one, you know, one group of people, one people that are very similar. And I think that, you know, we live in a world now, it's more open. You know what I mean? Like 50 years ago, people only knew the people in their town and whoever they saw on TV, the four channels. Now, my best friend can be a vlogger that I watch for 20 minutes every day that doesn't know my name. And that's the person I connect with the most. They live across the country. I think we live in a more connected society. And so I think it's really important for educators to take on, like, you know, so in Arkansas, if you have a certain amount of minorities in your school and you don't have that a similar number percentage wise in employees that are of that minority, you actually have to like write out a minority recruitment plan, and we would go to teacher fairs in different places to try and bring in people that didn't look like all the generic white people that we already had. Okay. And so we were trying to do that. I think that as a teacher, like I can't control like what I look like and who I am, but you know, what I can control, that video we talked about with flip learning. I can go to the third page and find somebody who doesn't look like me, who doesn't think like me, who has different, like a, you know, maybe a different accent, like whatever it is, I can use their video to present to my class and teach them the content, but it's from someone who doesn't look like this. You know what I mean? Because when you're the teacher, you're standing in front, they, in their head, subconsciously, they view someone that looks like you as the expert. And if they don't look like you or don't have whatever it is like you, then there might be a part of their brain saying, well, then I can't get that because I'm not blank. You know what I mean? And so it's windows and mirrors. You're opening it up. One, it's a mirror because you're allowing people that don't look like you to see an expert teaching them what you're trying to teach them that looks just like them. But it's also a window for the kids that do look like you to be able to see other people and be like, oh, wow, somebody looks like that is at that level of this. Like, it's so important. And I'll give you an example. So my youngest child, he's black. Okay. And so a few years ago, I love basketball, but I don't like watch it a lot. We just don't have time to watch the games and stuff. Yeah. I listen to podcasts to stay up on it, whatever. Judge me if you want. I'm a shadow fan, as they say. I live in the shadows. But it was the NBA finals, and it was the Lakers versus the Heat. And I was like, it's the finals. I got to watch it. So I sit on the couch, and I start watching it. And then a couple of my kids, my boys came in. My oldest, he's a white kid. He came in and sat over here. And my youngest, he was at the time, I guess probably like 4-ish. And he sat down next to me, and we're watching it. We were watching the game, and my youngest son, he just leaned over and he goes, Dad, I like watching this a lot. And I was like, oh, me too, buddy. What do you like about it? And he was like, because they look like me. And I was just like, it makes you think like me, like, because a lot of people look like generic white guys on TV. Right. And it's like, if you don't think about it, it's not in your purview because you don't have to think about it. It's like, I take it for granted.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, now I'm being like, I'm so like intentional about finding shows and movies. And I think a lot of times, you know, they don't always get it on the, you know, sometimes it's like, that's a little chill out. But I love that they're incorporating that and allowing people to see themselves in the heroes of these stories. And I just think it's incredibly important.
Absolutely. I think representation is huge. And I think you make a great point as far as the age that we live in. We do have the ability to let people feel represented by showing them videos of the other experts who don't fit what I look like, what you look like, what whoever's in front of the classroom, but fits more what the students look like. And I think, especially in healthcare, cultural competency is such a core need for healthcare professionals. You have to understand diversity and diverse needs and be able to respect different patient populations that not only do I want to apply it for my students, but I want them to learn about it in a way that they're going to apply that understanding to their patients when they're in the clinic. And so I appreciate your thoughts on that.
Well, I hope that episode was entertaining as much as it was informational and educational. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our past episodes, we ask you to please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. And please share out the episodes to those who you feel may be able to benefit from them. We also urge you to follow us on all social media platforms at HET Podcast and let us know what topics or experts you would like to hear from in future episodes. And just as a reminder, none of the information on today's show should be considered medical advice. It's simply infotainment or edutainment to help educate our audience. For medical advice, we always advise you to reach out to your preferred medical professionals, and we'll see you on the next show.